and welcome to KGOU's How Curious out of Norman, Oklahoma. How Curious is all about exploring interesting aspects of Oklahoma's past and present. I'm Rachel Hopkin, and I first came across the aspect featured in this episode whilst attending an Oklahoma Historical Society event. Some of the state's recent additions to the National Register of Historic Places were being celebrated, among them the Prairie House in Norman. I'd not heard of it, but was intrigued. I did a quick search on my phone, pulled up some photos, and probably began to look very puzzled indeed.
The Prairie House is a sight to behold.
Leela Cohen is the great-niece of the Prairie House architect, Herb Green, and an architect in her own right.
Uncle Herb designed it to look like it has many different aspects. It's not one thing. So it can look like a bird, a buffalo, a barn, a steeple. And he's trying to recall different aspects of our human history, different aspects of the prairie, because after all, this was a building for the prairie. It's a poem to the prairie, and it looks strange.
No argument from me there. In fact, about the one thing it doesn't look like is any conventional notion of a house. I've heard it likened to a sculptural object, a haystack, a boat, a shed about to blow over, even a prairie chicken. And since its completion in 1961, it's also been hailed as an excellent example of organic architecture, an embodiment of the American school of architecture, and a masterpiece. Green himself seems bemused by such a claim.
He still says, I can't believe the attention this tiny little house has gotten. You know, he's an artist that did architecture. And to him, the prairie was so inspirational. And he wanted to, I think, also honor the influence that he got from Bruce Goff.
Herb Green, Bruce Goff, organic architecture, the American School of Architecture. I suspect some of you How Curious listeners will already be familiar with those names and terms, but for those among you who are not, a bit of basic unpacking is in order. Let's start with Herb Green. He was born in 1929 in upstate New York and showed creative flair very early.
He would play with modeling clay and he would create these forms, these masses, that were provocative enough where his mother, she would look at them and think that they really held something special.
This aptitude later led Green to sign up to study architecture at the nearby Syracuse University. He became interested in the work of Frank Lloyd Wright, who designed his buildings to be in harmony with the environment around them. But when Green raised Wright's work with his professors, he was quickly shut down. Like many such US institutions at the time, the 50s and 60s, the Syracuse program focused on the International School of Architecture, which had roots in the German Bauhaus. What it called for were straightforward designs that used the same geometric shapes, boxes basically, over and again. When I spoke virtually with Herb Green himself a few weeks back, he's now 95, his frustration remained clear.
This seemed wrong. They had an ideal objection for one form, and you just repeated it. But the Bauhaus, I thought was bad, depression.
So when he saw an article by Architectural Forum on Bruce Goff called Pride of the Prairie, which showed Goff and the work that he was doing out here in Oklahoma, Uncle Herb immediately knew that this needed to be his teacher. And he hitchhiked from New York to Oklahoma.
And when I arrived, I went to his office and he talked to me for about 20, 25 minutes. And it changed my life. He was a genius architect and a genius educator. He knew about individuality, how individuals were different. And the site that the house was on and the history of the place. His talk made me understand not just about architecture, but just life in general.
Bruce Goff was a prodigy who was just 12 years old when he began interning with an architectural firm in Tulsa. Just over a decade later, and despite no formal academic training, he became a partner there. He practiced and taught for many years before joining the faculty of the University of Oklahoma's School of Architecture in 1947. Goff's approach was completely at odds with the formulaic didacticism of the International School, and Herb Green was among an influx of students attracted by his alternative ideas. What emerged then, right here in Norman, was a flowering of a unique organic approach which later came to be known as the American School.
To me, essentially, organic architecture means a unique response to nature, sight, people, history. And so instead of trying to impose or contrast against nature, it's embracing and trying to kind of blend in with nature. But you wouldn't find certain, you know, like when you look at Art Deco architecture or you look at Beaux-Arts architecture, you start looking for specific pieces of the building that look a certain way. Organic architecture isn't going to have that, and that's what makes it hard to define. And it's not intended to be repeated.
Oklahoma architect Michael Hoffner also sees Goff's pedagogical style as an important aspect here.
His concept for teaching was that he wanted the creative energy of each student to rise from within themselves and encouraged the sorts of free thinking and organic design that you see from those students' portfolios.
In this environment, Herb Green flourished. Upon graduation, he worked with a firm in Texas before returning to Norman to teach. That's when he began work on the Prairie House, which he intended to be a home for himself and his young family.
I just liked the prairie. I wanted a house that looked like it was all by itself. And I just bought a couple of acres.
The location was a rural area a couple of miles east of Norman.
It was a sort of elliptical plan, and I faced it due west because that's where the storms and tornadoes came from.
Green hired a local carpenter to do the bulk of the building work.
And he was very, very good. And then when the house was erected, myself and about five students did all the shingling inside.
You were certainly right about it being good for Herb to build his own house.
This is from a letter that Green's then-wife Mary wrote to her parents in the spring of 1960.
I don't know when I have seen him so excited. He has been working on it every day this week and comes home tanned, worn out, as happy and excited as can be. He has lots of help on it, but decided it was such hard work that he will have to pay the boys 50 cents an hour. We have been going out to the site a lot lately, and it is so refreshing to be out there. It has been warm and sunny with very little wind, and the grass is gold with red wheat-like weeds growing out of it. You just feel like rolling around in it. I would give anything if we could live out there this summer and enjoy the sunshine before it gets cold. Herb says maybe we can be in it by September, but the Keystone Copse Construction Company, as he says, must be prepared for lots of trouble.
I went to visit the Prairie House a few weeks ago, where I was met by Michael Hoffner, the architect who wrote its National Register nomination document, and Beau Jennings, who's the interim executive director of the Prairie House Preservation Society. We see cedar trees everywhere on the Oklahoma prairie, so fittingly, cedar wood is one of the primary construction materials of the building. Even the kitchen cupboards are made from it.
The dedication to the cedar shingle finish is unmatched. It's like the entire vertical and ceiling surface of the entire house. They fan out in different directions and they overlap in random ways.
Green ensured that the shingle was both cut and arrayed so as to evoke the feathers and fur of the prairie's native fauna, as well as of its grasses. And every so often there are intentional breaks in the pattern that recall ravines.
And the finer points of the design kind of happened while they were in the process of constructing. You could never draw all of the fantastical patterns, so there was an element of art happening in real time.
Aside from the kitchen, the family's bedrooms are also on the ground floor, all in close succession.
There's a real strong sense of family here. So you can imagine mom and dad getting up, going through this door, getting the children. This operable partition here allows the children to have privacy, or they can join the rooms together so they have a larger area to play.
I would have loved that when I was a child. And the huge windows.
Kind of a nerdy architectural thing, but if you look at the way the glass is fastened to the wall, it's very minimally done. There's no trim around the edges.
And the wood on the inside is the same as the wood on the outside.
You begin to perceive that there's really not a separation between the interior and the exterior because of the way the glass is detailed within this opening and how he's treated the materials around the perimeter.
Gosh, this is lovely.
The second floor of the house is one largely elliptical open space that's dominated, inside and out, by a vast semicircular window that faces west. It has a ruby red glass flap in one corner that can be opened for ventilation. Apparently, there used to be a large cushion in front of it where the entire Green family could relax of an evening.
This was the living room, basically. And then back over here was where Herb had his art and architecture studio.
Okay.
So he had a work area set up over here.
Oh, a pencil sharpener.
I know.
And some bottles of wine. Everything you need.
Those may not be original to the house. I'm not sure.
Should we look at the top floor?
If you're up for it, it's a little precarious, but yeah, we can go up there.
Last time I went up there, I got stung by a wasp. So
okay, after you.
Oh, okay, let's not go.
Thank you.
honestly, the delicious creakiness of this door made it worth the risk.
Wow, we're right up on the roof.
One of the striking features of the house that I've yet to mention is a sweeping metal double carport on its south side. Where that metal meets the roof, it forms a kind of steeple. Michael said that it wasn't until he was preparing the National Register document that he realized that this did more than provide a cover for cars.
I'm studying the house closely for the first time, really. And I go up to the roof. I'd left the front door open below, and I opened that door, and all of a sudden there was this whoosh of fresh air that started circulating through the house. And I was like, that's what that thing is for. It's natural air conditioning.
This engineering of passive systems is another typical feature of organic architecture.
It's called a solar chimney in architectural parlance, and it causes this convective loop of air to begin circulating through the house. It was one of those really special architectural experiences that you can have.
Now, at the time this was built, these trees weren't here. It was a lot more open and much more of a true prairie feel. And if you look at some of those photos from Life magazine in the 60s, just looks like it was in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, this just kind of like sprung out.
Even as it was being erected, the prairie house was drawing the attention of curious passers-by. Once it was completed in 1961, it became something of a sensation. Bruce Gough declared it a masterpiece. It was in Life magazine and other publications internationally. By the way, you can find a link to photos of it from that time, as well as more recent images on our webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. Green was suddenly a fated young architect, and he decided to accept an attractive offer from the University of Kentucky's architecture program. So the Green family actually left the Prairie House after only having lived in it for a year and a half.
After 64 years, the house has gone through one main ownership after Uncle Herb and his family, but the owner who had it the longest ironically wanted privacy. And so because this house was drawing so much attention, she planted trees all around it. So the house kind of went into seclusion for those five decades.
In more recent years, the house has gone through a couple of ownerships, both of which had the intention of restoring it.
But they run into difficulties, you know, where they realize actually this is quite a project. And, you know, because it looks alive, it has this quality of looking like it's dying. And it's painful. So then the idea of having a nonprofit take over the house came up. So that's what the Prairie House Preservation Society was formed to do.
I think we see this being a cultural hub for the community.
Bo Jennings is the Preservation Society Interim Executive Director.
For so many years, this place has just existed as, you know, a legend or a rumor. I'm trying to cross that bridge. You know, School of Architecture students can come study here and learn from it, but not just that. You know, we want people from all walks of life to be inspired by this amazing piece of art that sprung up on the prairie, and to know that those sorts of things not only are possible here, but they happen, I think, because they are here.
There's a link to the Prairie House Preservation Society where you can find out about its progress on the How Curious webpage. Thanks so much to all of the contributors to this episode, including voice artist Nicole Poole for reading the Mary Green letter excerpt. Thanks also to Bo Jennings and the Tigers for this music track. It's called Sooner Superette. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden, David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. As ever, if you have an idea for a future How Curious episode, please drop us a line at curious@kgou.org.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.